I'm an alcoholic. My name is Beth Gordon. Ah, what an honor, what a privilege. And, you know, people say that a lot from up here, and you think, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. But it is, seriously. And especially this, because I, you know, Jay and I go back many, many years, and I'll get to that in a little while, but it is indeed an honor and a privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. And not only that, it saved the lives of my family, which was told to me by somebody very, very dear. First of all, I want to thank you not only for having me, but I want to thank the speakers who have been wonderful. And if you've missed any, you're out of luck, because they go by their tapes. They really, really special. And I already told Blessed John that I'll be on a plane going home and I'll miss him in the morning, but I'll sure listen to your tape. And Cindy, you're invited to come to Brecksville, Ohio. We don't have any Eskimos there either. A lot of snow, too. Anyway, it's just been a real, and you know, if you have any questions about if I'm telling the truth or not, there happen to be some members of my home group sitting here. Do you want to raise your hands or stand up or do something with yourselves? And they'll tell you the truth, you know, but indeedy, it is an honor and it is a privilege. Some stuff I have to get out of the way first. I do have a sobriety date, and it is by the grace of God and rooms like this and 12 wonderful steps and good, good sponsorship that I've not found it necessary to pick up a drink since March the 5th of 1972, and for this I am terribly, terribly grateful. And, you know, my hope is that your applause is going right to the people who it should be going to, the sponsors, the home groups, the gods, and the people that have been in my life that have given me so much. Terribly grateful for that. And I have a home group, Golden Link. We meet on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock in Macedonia, Ohio. So if you're ever driving by Macedonia, Ohio at 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning with nothing to do, do drop in. I think it's the greatest home group in the world. It is not my first home group. My first home group was the Independence Group, and when I found it necessary to return to work because of situation in my sobriety, I had to change a home group, because I was told you don't miss a home group even when you're dead. You hover. We have special permission to miss it this Sunday, but, you know, that's how it is. And this home group is teaching the same one thing my first home group taught me, and that's to get active. It's to watch for the newcomer that comes through the door and go up and talk to him and give him that wonderful hope that you find in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Give him your phone number and tell him those two words that were told to me one day and that I hear a lot of, that we understand. And that happened to me in the Independence Group. I was afraid to go back to the Independence Group because, and you'll hear about that, I had been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous quite a few times and had been to the Independence Group and drinking. And when God gave me the gift of sobriety and I took it and understood what I needed to do with it, my sponsors took me to the Independence Group. I was terrified to go up there and face those people again, and my sponsors kept saying to me, it'll be all right, and You had to go up kind of two flights of stairs, and when I got to the top, there was a man standing at the door that I had known before, and I thought, here it comes, you know, and he took my cold hand in his warm one, and he looked right into my eyes, and he said, we understand. And that was a beginning, the real solid beginning. And that man happened to be Jay Plumbeck's father. And so still waters run pretty deep, Jay. They sure do. So anyway, and Golden Link gets you active, gets you going. The kitchen duty is there, just like it was in the beginning, to get to meetings early and hang around late and all those things that the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous teach you that have been teaching us for years and years and years. The wonderful fellowship. Get there early enough and stay there late enough, you know, you'll be able to tidy up. Today it's easy. You just throw away styrofoam cups. When I got sober, we didn't have styrofoam cups. We had china cups. We spent hours in the kitchen with those china cups, you know, washing them and getting them nice and dry. And in the course of that, we had fellowship and everybody smoked. So we had tons of ashtrays, which was all right for everybody to smoke because the smoke was so thick you couldn't tell who was in the meeting and who wasn't. And, you know, spent hours cleaning up the ashtrays. And what a deal. What a deal. If you're homeless, find a home. It's special. And I have a sponsor. My sponsor has 47 years of uninterrupted sobriety. My sponsor lives by the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor continues to go through the steps with me. She's big on the 10th step. And if ever I have any complaints or I'm whiny or any of that, she'll say, what part did you play in it? Do the 10th step. And she's taught me to take my inventory by taking a bath every night. She said, cleanliness is next to godliness, so while you're sitting in the bathtub, take your inventory, and then you'll be all squeaky clean when you get out. And even took a bath here, so she's something else. Love her dearly. The home group, she's a member of the home group. They know Pat. They know her husband, Jim, very, very well. She isn't the first sponsor I ever had. She is my fourth sponsor. Sponsors before her, one moved away and the other two passed on. My first sponsor, who helped me lay the groundwork for, she said, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous on concrete, not on shifting sand, picked up a drink when I had 4 years of sobriety, and she committed suicide when I had 6 years of sobriety. And the message she left me with was this. It is imperative to practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in all your affairs. Because if you don't, you're going to go down. And I try very hard to do that. And again, you know, I've heard it over and over in the rooms. If you want to know what I'm doing, ask a member of my home group or go home and ask my family. And they'll tell you. So it's been quite a journey. It is quite a journey. And, you know, you told me when I first got sober that this was a journey kind of like when you're sitting on a choo-choo train. It's sort of look out a window on a choo-choo train, and sometimes you see stuff that's really pretty, and it makes you feel all good on the inside. You know, the sun is shining, and you see wheat in the wheat fields, or you can look out there, like, you know, and see the ocean and the waves, and you see the blue sky and stuff like that, and you really feel good on the inside. But if you keep looking out the window, sooner or later, you're going to get someplace where it's dark, and it's ugly, and it isn't too nice out there. It may be rainy, it may be snowy, it may be doing things that don't make you feel too good on the inside. But I was told if you stay on the journey, pretty soon the sun is going to come out. And you'll learn. On this journey, I was told to see a ray of sunshine coming through the darkest cloud. And you were right. You're 100% right. I love this journey. I always told him I've told him once, I can't wait till I get there. The end of the journey. And they said, what do you mean get there? And I said, get there. You know everything there is to know. You know all about the big book, all about the 12 steps. You know everything that you need to know. And you're there. And my sponsor said, you know what? You never get there. That's why you stay in meeting rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why you continue to do the same things that you do when you first walk through the doors of AA and first learn what you need to do in order to stay sober a day at a time. And I said, the day I die, I'll know it all. And she looked at me and shook her head, and she said, let me tell you something about the day you die. The day you die, you're going to the big meeting in the sky, and when you walk through the gates, you're going to start in as the new person and start all over again. So never argue with your sponsor. So anywho, well, it says to tell in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous a little bit about, in a general way, what happened and what it was like and what's going on today in your life. And I didn't pick up my first drink till I was 26 years old. I didn't want to be like her. Her was my mom, and my mother was a full-blown alcoholic by the time I was 12 years old, and I had all the responsibility of taking care of my younger stepbrother that was 9 and a half years younger than I was, and that was a pain in the neck. I had to take him when I'd go out on a date when I got older. He had to come too. So we had to go places like the zoo and things like that. And he was such a pain. You'd be sitting there talking with, your dear boyfriend, and all of a sudden up behind the sofa would come a periscope. And he'd look. And it was the thing he'd sent in 10 cents in the box top of a Ralston cereal thing to Tom Mix. And he got this thing that could see around the corner and say, just pain. And I thought, that's never going to happen to my kids. I'm never going to put my kids in that position. I'm never going to give them all the responsibility. And I really disliked my mother in a horrible way. Angry, hateful, didn't talk to her much. And I remember when I got sober, and I happened to mention this, you told me that resentment rots the pot it's in. And I better do something about it because it was going to chew me up on the inside. And you've never told me to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous and not told me how to do it. And I appreciate that. And you said, what you do is sit down and you write down all the positive things about your mother that you can think about. So I remembered, my mom was in the hospital when she was 3 months pregnant with me. She was called what they call a bleeder. And she had to pretty well have bed rest the whole entire 7 months. And my father went to the hospital and visited her on Thanksgiving Day in 1930. And at the age of 24, he had to have a drink. And he stopped in a speakeasy in Chicago where he knew there was liquor. And he got gunned down on the barroom floor. And because it was back in the days of Al Capone, who was selfish and self-centered, and didn't want anybody to have any of his booze. And my father had known where to get it. So my mother and I moved in with my Scottish grandfather, and I remembered that my mom was the one that would rock me to sleep at night when I got afraid. that my mother was the one that saw to it that I had 9 years addiction lessons, because with Scottish brogues all around me, the kids used to laugh at me and made it uncomfy. So my mama saw to it I could talk like everybody else. They also laughed at me because I didn't have a father, and I felt left out. I felt different. And Mama was always there to hold me and comfort me and say it was going to be all right. And then when I was eight years old, did remarry one of the finest men I have ever known in my life. Never thought of him as a stepfather. A good man. But Mama was there to always hold me when I was hurt. She sat with me in the kindergarten rooms when I didn't want to be there. And then when I was about 11 and a half or 12, alcohol entered the picture and destroyed my mom and made her into something that I never wanted to be around. And so I could understand and I could forgive my mother. And you've heard that all weekend about forgiveness, and it's wonderful. And got rid of the resentment and was able to tell my mother, you know, to apologize to my mother for my attitude and what it had been like, and to really hold her and tell her I loved her before she died, and it meant the world to me. And I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for that, because I'd hate to be still carrying this resentment. Hate it. My mother and I became very good friends. And so, you know, I had a nasty attitude, selfish, self-centered, and everything else. And when Prince Charming came driving along in his 1955 Ford, I hopped into it and went off into the sunset with his 6-foot, blonde, blue-eyed, shoulders like the Rocky Mountain Man. And into the future I went to get everything I wanted, get my own way, because I was getting married. Marriage doesn't work like that. And I didn't know how to give. I didn't know how to be in a relationship. And I let him know it. And pretty soon, when my first daughter was born, a year and a half after we were married, I didn't like being a mother either. Because I had to do for her when she wanted me to do it. And I wanted to do it when I wanted to do it. And I wanted to do the stuff I wanted to do. And I couldn't. Because I had this ghastly child, and I was married. And the funny part about this is, when I was a little girl running in the sunshine, chasing butterflies, all I wanted to be was a good wife and a good mother. And now I had it, and I didn't want it anymore. So we were at a party, and somebody said to me, you know, you never smile. You walk around like you got this thundercloud over your head. You don't carry on a conversation. He said, here, why don't you have a drink? And it was a Manhattan on the rocks with a bunch of stuff in it. And I forgot the promise that I'd made to myself. And I picked that thing up and I drank it like a glass of water. And I don't need to tell you what happened to me. I came in from out there. By Jingy, I could talk about anything. I could tell you how to lay bricks. I could tell you how to put roofs on houses. I could give you all the good, intensive duties of being a mother. I could help you cook anything you wanted to. I knew everything, and I started to smile. And if you want to know, I kind of didn't learn how to smile really till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, you said when you're running around reading the big book and all that stuff, why don't you smile and give your face something to do so it doesn't feel left out? So, ever since. Anyway, that first drink did it. And I think the thing was, when I went to the bathroom, in reality, shot out of my life right away. Because when I went to the bathroom and I looked in the mirror when I was washing my hands, I saw the reflection of Elizabeth Taylor as she once looked, looking back at me. And I knew I had it made. And from that time, I drank, I got drunk, and I got into a lot of trouble. Scotch was my favorite drink. But back in the day, we had to go to state liquor stores. And you had a little piece of paper, and you had to fill it out with your name and what you wanted and give it to the little man. And then he went behind this counter where he had a lot of booze, and he'd take down a bottle, and he'd stand there with a bottle like this, and he'd say, "Elizabeth Gordon, black and white, scotch," and "Yoo-hoo, yoo-hoo, yes, it's me." And then you'd have to go get it. I was in a lot of state liquor stores, and then I got thinking. And I don't know about you, but I got a thinking problem. Oh, telling you, it's getting worse. Every year I'm sober, I get one more committee member up there in my head, and it's getting very, very full. You know, and it talks to me today. It'll say things like, "Why are you going to another meeting? For God's sake, you're 81 years old. Why don't you stay home and lie down on the couch and watch reality TV? The housewives doing their thing. Why don't you blah, blah, blah? Don't answer the phone. It might be a sponsee calling. And you don't want to hear their trouble. Don't do it. Don't do it." And they talk to you all the time like that. Don't smile at her. Don't wave at that. If I listened to that, I'd be drunk. So what I have to do is what you've taught me to do, a day at a time over the years. And by God, that's to get these feet going. And to get in a car and get to a meeting and to answer the phone and to pick up a phone and to call people and to do things like that and get to meetings early and hang around for coffee and meet people for coffee. Do all those things. You know, because it's thinking problem. It's awful. You know, I cut myself shaving. My legs, thank you. And you know how you are. You get toilet paper and you plop it on your legs. And I went to bed and I thought, oh dear, I'm bleeding a lot. I bet it's getting on the sheets. Maybe I ought to go get up and get a Band-Aid. Put Neosporin on it. It'll get infected. Maybe I cut it too deep. Maybe I better go to the ER. Within 10 minutes, I have my leg amputated. That's so, anyway. That was a big, with his thinking problem, though, when I was drinking, I thought they're going to send all these little papers to the FBI in Washington. They're going to have stacks, and they're going to come and arrest me for what I don't know. But you know how your mind works when you're drinking? So I switched to wine. Loved it. Rocket juice. Got me going where I wanted to go. And I loved it because it came in large economy sizes. And then the smaller fifths. And then the pints you could shove down your front and nobody could see it when you snuck it in the house. And I loved it. My favorite place, oh, and a good wine. I mean, Italian Swiss Colony Sherry and Muscatel. The top shelf stuff, and the guy on the next street made Mad Dog. And I loved it. It had white crunchy stuff on the bottom, and got my nutrients that way. And so I didn't have to eat, and my favorite place to hide my wine was in the douche bag. And if you don't know what one is, go home and ask your grandmother. She'll tell you. I used to pour it in it and then put foil over the top so the fumes wouldn't come out and hang it up in the bathroom. Nobody's going to look in there. And then when the great thirst would come over me, I'd go in the bathroom, shut the door, and take that hose and... I had no trouble with a second step. So, he found it. So I had to switch my tactics. You know, you paint the bottle white, you hang it out the second story window on a white rope, because the house is white, and you can't see it hanging out there because you go look. And, you know, stuff like that in the dryer. And you're fine till somebody starts the dryer, and then everybody goes around smelling like Italian Swiss colony for months. And all that stuff. And then I got into the checking account and the savings account and ruined it. And after 5 years of this, my husband said to me, I think you have a drinking problem. You better do something about it. Go to Alcoholics Anonymous, or I'm going to cut off your allowance. Those were the magic words. Because he took me off the checking account and the savings account. I used to whine about that when I first got sober. You know? And you know what you told me? You said to me, you got to earn the right. You got to earn the right to do what the normal people do. When I had 5 years of uninterrupted sobriety, I got put back on the savings account, the checking account, not one day before. I had to earn the right. So anyway, I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first of three times. If you're new, for God's sake, listen. I walked into the room about a minute before and sat way in the back. I heard your stories. I heard about your jails. I heard about your, you know, DUIs. I heard about your assault and batteries. I heard about all this. So your job losses, your divorces. But see, none of that had happened to me yet. And I think yet is a powerhouse word. Because I guarantee you, I've seen it happen over and over again. If you don't do the things you're supposed to do and you go back out there, it's miserable. My biggest fear today, if I have any fear at all, would be to pick up a drink and drive into a parking lot at a meeting and want to get out of that car and go back into that meeting and not being able to. I don't want that to happen. Maybe that's why I'm doing the same thing I've been doing for years. I don't know. I don't know. Got out of it. And then the social service workers were on my case in about 2 years. My children weren't going to school dressed properly. The language was getting unbearable. I was a yeller, I was a screamer, I was a tyrant. And a teacher at school overheard my oldest daughter tell the next one in line, if you get sick, stay in school. Don't go home. Don't go home with her. And they said I'd lose my children. Or I'd have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober. And I didn't want to lose my kids. See, I didn't understand what was going on. And my husband was a sales engineer, and he traveled, and he had a lot of Ohio, and he was gone 3 days, 3 nights and 4 days a week. And I asked him when I got sober, I said, what went through your mind? And he said to me, you know, and here was this wonderful guy, a man's man, you know, all the way around. He said, Beth, I never knew what fear was in my life until alcohol came into our home and made it, started making it into a house. He said, I had a responsibility. I had to put food on the table. I had to keep a roof over my children's heads. And he said, I'd sit in that driveway. And he said, I wouldn't know what to do. He said, I have never felt fear like that in my life. And he said, sometimes I'd cry. But he said, I had to go do what I had to do. And he said, I never prayed so hard in my life to God. And he said, you know, I'd call the house. And he said, to talk to the children a lot when I was gone. He said, but you were always standing there. I could tell. By the way they were answering me, I could tell you were right there in the background. He says, the most horrible time of our lives. I didn't want to lose my kids. Went back around AA, played the same game. Went to one meeting a week. Now, I don't know what you do, and I don't care what you do, because I got to care about what I do. And I cannot survive under three meetings a week. I get a thinking problem. Yeah, I get like a crab, you know. I got that crab thing, too. And I need to go to meetings to keep them shut up. And I was going to this one meeting a week and quit going. And then a couple of years later, I was standing in front of a judge on my ninth DUI on an assault and battery charge. Well, the Summit County Sheriff tried to pick me up because, well, the soft berm came up into the middle of the street and I found the car in it. You know how that goes. And he wanted to take me home, and I didn't want him to. I mean, my God, what would the neighbors think? Probably would have had a party. So, I got mad, he got madder, and I got madder yet. Hit him over the head with my wine bottle. And he got 24 stitches, and I got my picture taken with some numbers under my chin. And I was in deep, deep doo-doo, So the judge said, 90 days in the workhouse or you're going to AA. I didn't want to go to the workhouse. They wore striped suits, and I didn't like striped suits. So I said, I'll go to AA. And I went back to AA, and I played the same game. And the next 4 years were unbelievable hell. You know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and poor little victim, you know. Are you kidding? The victims were at home. The victims were in a man and four children. And unbearable. And all I'll say about it is this. I went to the second story window and looked out at my kids at the bus stop. I saw the ladies out there from the neighborhood, and their hair was shining, and they were laughing, and it had been a long time since my hair had shone. And I didn't laugh, and I couldn't cry. And I didn't understand half the time what was going on. And their kids were standing there, and they were holding on to their mom's hands. And the kids were laughing and having a good time. My kids were standing over there. Nobody wants their kids to play with the kids of a drunk. Because if they do, she might come. And she had. She'd gone into birthday parties. She'd gone to school and tried to drag him out. She'd driven the wrong way on the highways with other people's children in the car. She destroyed friendships. My children had no friends. Thank God they had each other. The loneliest existence of their lifetime. And my husband? Nobody called him to play golf anymore. Nobody called him to bowl anymore. His job was hanging by a thread because she'd go out in the golf course and look for him. She'd go into a bowling alley to find him. She went into his job and almost destroyed him. The loneliest times of their lives. My God, I don't know how they got through it. On March the 4th of 1972, I'd finished everything there was to drink in the house by 9 o'clock in the morning. So first time, I didn't have that god-awful feeling down here if I didn't get something alcoholic in my system, I was going to die. I didn't go after the rubbing alcohol. I didn't go after that, nothing. I just sat there. And I watched my kids and my husband go to church. Nobody said goodbye. They hadn't talked to me in weeks, months. They didn't dare. And on those faces, I saw it was written all the hell, damnation, and horror of this disease. And when that door shut, I knew something. I knew that all of that was because I am an alcoholic. And I was destroying their lives. I wanted to live. I wanted to learn how to live. I didn't want to be an alcoholic anymore. And I made up my mind way down deep in my heart that I was willing to do anything to change those faces. And I believe that and I didn't say, God, help me. I just slammed the door on God a long time ago. But I believe in that split second of time that little part of me that hadn't been eaten alive by alcohol opened up and God zoomed in with a gift of sobriety. And I don't think it's going to happen again. And maybe that's why I stay in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe that's why I continue to do the same things that I've been doing for 40 years. The gift was given. And I don't want to get careless with it. It maybe is like getting a Monopoly set. I don't know. You know, you want one. You get one. You play with it. You're so happy you have it. And then you pick up all the pieces and you put it back together. You know? And when you're done with it, you put it back on the shelf. And it's all there and it's together. When you take it down to play with it again. But if you get careless and you lose a piece over here and something over here, the day will come when you can't play it anymore. And that's the way I feel about sobriety. Called my Aunt Jean in Chicago, who at that time had 9 years of uninterrupted sobriety. Told her I'm an alcoholic. I needed help. And she asked me the name of an old-timer that had never given up hope on me, and his name was Jerry Jackson. He died with umpty years of sobriety. And, you know, Jerry, I had met Jerry in the 60s. And he came over, and he gave my family hope. That same kind of hope that we give to each other in rooms like this. That same kind of hope that we give each other when we have coffee with each other. That hope we give to the newcomer when we take that cold hand in our warm one and we say welcome. That same kind of hope we finally give to our families, to our kids, when we're waiting for them after school, or we ask them how they're doing, and we take time. That hope that rings eternal in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and in our lives, when we get sober, that God-given hope. You know, Jerry said it wasn't going to be easy. But nothing that's worthwhile is easy. He said, but you take our hands and you trudge this road with us, it'll get better. And I think I know what better is today. Better's being able to live with this. And I better, because everywhere I go, I'm already there. I mean, ye gods, I go to the bathroom, I'm sitting on the thing. You know, I have to say, move over. I go to get into bed, it's like, get over there. I'm wherever I go, I take myself. And if I'm unhappy with this, something's going on. And thank God for sponsorship, huh? And a good support system. Who could ask for anything more? It's all God-given. My Aunt Jean left me with a message. When she had 20 years of sobriety, she quit going to meetings. Said she didn't need them anymore. She was getting tired. She picked up a drink. And 6 months later, she died of internal hemorrhaging. It's there. Don't leave me alone. And then they came. The kamikazes. The sponsors. Be grateful today. Today you can pick your own. Back then we had to take what we got and we couldn't return it. You know, God bless 12-step calls. In the door they come. You didn't know who they were. And all they did was, my God, they seemed to know everything about you. And all they were doing was sharing their experience, you know, and then giving you the strength and hope you needed. I missed 12-step calls, but they're coming back. I remember the first one I went on. My sponsor called me. I was sober maybe 4 months, and I shook like I was standing on a foot machine. For the first 9 months, I was sober. It was awful. I couldn't. You picked up my coffee cups at meetings and would get, because you didn't want me to spill it all over you, I guess. But it was just a boo, boo. So she picks me up. She said, we're going, calls up. She said, the hand is out. And when the hand is out, we are responsible. I'll be there in 10 minutes. So I'm waiting outside, because back then, you didn't say to a sponsor, I don't want to go. I'm too tired. I can't get in the car. You know, it was get in the car. Sit down, shut up. Take the cotton out of your ears and stuff it in your mouth. Be quiet. And so 10 minutes I'm waiting for. Get in the car. Off we go. She explains a 12-step call to me. We get to the house. Go to the door. Nobody's home. I start back to the car. She said, where are you going? I said, nobody's home. She said, wait a minute. See up there on the second floor? There's a window open this much. We're going to the garage to see if they have an extension ladder. I said, that's breaking and entering. She said, no, it isn't. We called her. She didn't call us. And when the hand is, I didn't. There was one. We put it up. And she said to me, you're going up. I said, I'm afraid of heights. Faith and fear do not dwell in the same house. Get up. With much ado coming from below, I'm climbing the thing. And I get to the top, and I pushed open the window, and I went through, and I caught my foot on the windowsill, fell into the room, flat down on the poor, suffering alcoholic that's lying spread-eagled on the floor, hanging on to her bottle. I didn't know what to say to this woman. I'm laying on her. I'm this far from... I just looked at her and said, did you call Alcoholics Anonymous? She... She stayed sober for 15 years till she died. She said every day was out of fright. Who cares? Who cares? So it's in these rooms I'm learning how to stay sober. It's in these rooms that when I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there wasn't any, St. Thomas Hospital was full, and Rosary Hall was full, and they decided nobody'd ever died on them yet. So they took me to meetings, and we went 2 and 3 times a day, 7 days a week for the first year I was sober. Once, I said I was too tired to go. She sucked in air, and I held on to everything so I didn't go through the phone. And she said, I'll be there in 10 minutes. Wanted to gag on Caro syrup and orange juice. They used to give it today, give us that. Dragged us down to Rosary Hall for vitamin B shots at least every other day. We had a lot of heads are going like this. You know, it's carried Hershey bars. When you got feeling, you're supposed to sit down wherever you were and eat the Hershey bar, make it feel good. And I miss stuff like that. I remember walking into the meetings. Men were over here. Women were over there. Well, women there were. And they said to me, you do not give a man your phone number. And women sponsor women, men sponsor men. And I remember some nice man came up to me and he said, here, dear. And I was kind of cute back then, you know. Right. And he said, here, dear, here is my phone number. Do you hear? And my sponsor said, it won't do you any good. She doesn't have a telephone. And that was the end of that one. I remember those. It was really something else, you know. No arguing. Sponsor knew everything. And I don't know what I'd have done without him. I just don't. In the meetings. To meetings, 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 meetings. And would take down the one thing of value. That's what they told me to do, write down one thing of value. I learned in every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was new and couldn't write because I was shaking, I'd go to my sponsor and she'd write it down. And I started getting better. And I started being able to have kitchen duty. And I always had to go to meetings early. And I always had to stand at the door. And I always had to do stuff like that. And then sponsorship came into my life. And I love sponsorship. I learn more from the people I sponsor than I can give to them. And it's the truth. I have a sponsee sitting out here. And I have a grand sponsee sitting out here. And it's the most wonderful feeling in the world when you see him getting sober and getting active and they help somebody else. That's the way it works. Thank God for him. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. And you started me on the absolutes. We use those over there. And you said because you're too dingbat to read the big book. So, we'll start you on the absolutes. Nothing's absolute, but these are woven like golden threads throughout the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity. And you said the most important thing about these is there's four questions that come out of these. It's a good thing to think about and answer before you open that hole in your face, commonly known as your mouth, or you make a decision. It's what you are about to do or say, right or wrong. It's what you are about to do and say, ugly or beautiful. It's what you are about to do and say, true or false. And most important of all, how will it affect the other guy? Help you, I will. Hurt you, I won't. Then got into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. 2 pages a day out loud to get it in here, to here, and down into here. I still read 2 pages a day out loud in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's the greatest love story that has ever been written. It's a love story between people nobody wanted, and yet God saw to it that a stockbroker from New York and a doctor from Akron, Ohio, got together and sat down and look at us today. You know, I get goosebumps when I think to myself, what if Bill Wilson had gone right instead of turned left to a phone? It is so God planned out. So God planned out. And then the 24-hour book. I read that 4 times a day out loud to get the thought for the day in here. Still do that today, too. And progressed on with the steps and came to believe in you. You never lied to me. You never have. And then the time came when you said you're ready, and at night we want you on your knees, put your bedroom slippers underneath your bed, and say thank you. And I said, to who and for what? And you said, don't push the river, it runs by itself, easy does it, but do it. You know that stuff you say. And then in the morning when you wake up and you lie there and you listen to the sounds of the beginning of the new day, I thought you were nuts. Nuts. And my sponsor said, have you ever tried it? And I said, no. She said, try it. You might like it. And I did. And you want to know something, people? I heard thunder for the first time in my life. I heard rain for the first time in my life. I heard the coyotes calling in the valley. I heard the moans and groans that come out of in your home. I heard the breathing of the people in my house. Love had started. I heard ice, how it crackles on trees after an ice storm. Try it. You might like it. The only thing I would say to you is if you live by yourself and you hear somebody breathing, you better dial 911. And then they said, get on the knees. Get on the knees in the morning. Remind yourself you're an alcoholic and the problem is you. And get up and go make lemonade out of the lemons of life that are bounced your way today by using the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous that you've learned. And I did it because I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to be drunk. And I don't know when it happened, but I came to believe in a power greater than myself that I call God. You know, I see God in everything. I see God in my children. I saw God many times in the eyes of that wonderful man that was hung in there all those years. I see God in the eyes of my 12 grandchildren. I see God in the eyes of my 5 great-grandchildren. And God has a wonderful sense of humor. I was going like this. And I had my grandson Jake walk by the door. He said, "What are you doing, Grandma?" They were all over for something. I don't know, for some reason I was, you know, this would look all pulled up. And I said, "I don't know, seeing what it would look like if I had $25,000. And he said to me, "Grandma, you can do anything you want to with your face, but you better be careful because God might not know who you are." And I, let it all fall down. Who cares? Grandchildren are wonderful. I wish I had more time to tell you about all of them. But I do have a grandson, and I pray for all the time. He's paid an ultimate price with his drinking. He was removed from the United States Navy. And so remember, add him in your prayers. And God's in every one of them. I didn't know how to let go and let God. You know, you run around saying, "Let go, let God, let go, let God." How? So you said, "Anybody ever fix anything for you, Grandma?" And I said, "Yes." And you said, "Okay, Tootsie Cake, tell us." And I remembered my having tea with my raggedy underneath a cherry tree. And the dog came and got my raggedy Ann, tore off her arms, tore a big hole in her hair, tore her butt and eye down here, was tearing out her hair. She was a mess. And I loved her more than anything. And I picked her up and picked all those pieces up, and I took it to my grandpa, and I climbed up on his lap, and I said, "Grandpa, can you fix this?" And I remember those strong arms around me, and I remember those blue eyes looking right into mine, and that Scottish brogue when he said to me, "Bethy, I cannot fix her until you let go," and I released the doll. I didn't give him a time limit. I didn't tell him how. It was that blind faith of a child. And that's how I release and let go of things today to God. The same way. And that's how I had to come to grips with my first, fourth, and fifth step. That because of my irresponsibility when I was drinking, I am responsible for the death of two of my children. I had a little girl that had the measles when she was a year and a half old. And my three-year-old daughter came out, and you had to watch them because back then they didn't have all the things they have today for the measles. And my three-year-old daughter, Annie, came into the kitchen, and she said, "Mama, Kimmy's the color of the sky." And I told Ann to go away. "Leave me alone. I was busy. I was drinking." And in a split second, she was back in the kitchen again. And she said, "Mama, Kimmy's going like this." And I hit Ann. And I told her to leave me alone. Took a three-year-old to go next door to get neighbors to help her sister. Kimberly had four very violent convulsions, and the neurosurgeons at Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital said that she had retrogressed back mentally to a three-week-old baby and would stay that way until she died. We had to put her in a private home because my husband said nobody at home could care for her 24 hours around the clock. He went down to see Kimmy on his travels. He took my children down there to introduce them to their sister as they came along, and I never saw Kimberly sober. And the day she died, when she was 9, on a Good Friday, my husband went down with the funeral director and got her, and brought her home and made the arrangements. And I stayed in my room with the door locked and drank. That was heavy stuff. I also had a little boy in 1970 who lived 8 days and he died. He died of acute alcohol poisoning because his mama had drank around the clock, carrying him, always listening, oh, it's going to be all right. Well, it isn't, and it wasn't. And Jeffrey's buried next to his sister. I don't know what I would have done without you. Because you taught me about forgiveness of self. And the way you started was this. You said, Beth, God knows everything you have done since the day you were put on this earth. Everything. Every move you've made, every thought you've had, everything you have done. And yet God chose to give you a new life and a gift of a new life. And if God has forgiven you enough to hand you a new life, who are you not to forgive yourself? I started there. It took months. It took weeks. It took years. Until I came to believe and do believe. Sober, I am the best wife, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother that ever was put on the face of the earth. Drunk, I am nothing. Nothing. And I remember when my husband and my children and my sponsors and I went to Kimberly and Jeffrey's grave and we knelt down and we said the third and seventh step prayer. And my children and my husband have gone on to forgive me over the years. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you, God, I'll tell you. And so, you know, I made living amends, and I believe that's what life is all about, making living amends. Happiness comes into the life. It isn't easy in the beginning at home, and you're the guys that say, take it home. And it took months and it took years. And we're a wonderful family unit today. And I wish I had more time to tell you about it. A little boy, the 7-year-old boy that taught his mother how to make her first sober sandwich. A little boy who hadn't talked to his mother for 3 years after she got sober. That was on a ball mound pitching a ball. And you told me you keep going. You keep doing what you need to do. And if they return, they return. And if they don't, we'll deal with that. And I remember that little boy turning around with that baseball in his hand and saluting his mother before he threw the final pitch and after the game was over. He said to me, it doesn't make any difference if we win or we lose as long as you're here. And that was the beginning. They called me, those sons of mine, tonight. And they said, Mama, good luck. And if you need us, we'll be there. And then the Brecksville Fire Department behind him said, we'll be there too, Mom G. They're firemen, they're paramedics, they're wonderful kids, and my girls are good. And it's a good, good, good family unit full of love. And that wonderful man who hung in there loved Alcoholics Anonymous. He loved you. And we learned, Bruce and I learned what love was all about. Bruce had given me unconditional love for a long time before I came in here and found out what it was all about. It's wonderful. And we walked together and we went fishing together and we played golf together and we found out about each other all over again. And when I was 4 years sober, we heard some pretty nasty stuff, that he had leukemia. And I watched the most wonderful man in the world for 2.5 years go downhill, and I was completely powerless to do anything about it. But you were there. Never had a day alone. You brought things to the house. You taught my kids how to skate. You taught my kids how to do everything. You took them to the movies. You brought meetings into the house when I couldn't get out. When I could get out, you stayed there with Bruce. You loved him. And he loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what I would have done without you. You simply carried all of us. And the day before he died, he said to me, "You want to dance?" And we put on an old Sinatra record. And I held him to me because he weighed 103 pounds. And as we rocked back and forth, he said to me, "Bethy, I want you to pass something on." Not only did Alcoholics Anonymous save your life, but it saved our lives too. And pretty soon I'll be able to say thank you to the man who made it all possible. It was hard to let go of him. My kids and I did it together. We tucked him in and we kissed him goodnight. We walked out of the room and gave him to God. Miss him, yeah. But I see him in everything. See him in my kids. See him in the families. He did so much for so many. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God for sobriety. So if you're new, stay here. Don't keep coming back. It's a waste of time. Just stay here. Okay? Anyway, gas is going up, so just stay here. And all you have to do is you don't drink. You go to meetings. You find an icky sponsor. You do what they say, even if you don't like it. You go to meetings, even if you don't want to and think they're icky and stinky. Go anyway. The donuts are always good. Keep your side of the street clean. And above and beyond all, help another drunk. I'm going to share one thing with you real quick. According to this clock, I have a couple minutes. He has his clock up there for us. That was very kind. I had a carotid bypass 11 years ago. And it's when they cut you open like a turkey. And then they get in there, and I had a 97% blockage from where the carotid comes into the heart. So they took this and that, and they cleaned this, and they did that, and they rustled around with everything, and, you know, slit my throat and all that stuff and for about 5.5 hours, and then sewed me up and took me downstairs into ICU. And my children were there. And they were with me about 1.5 to 2 hours. And the doctor said, "You can go home now. She's fine." They were gone about 2 hours and all hell broke loose, as I understand. The flat line came. Blood pressure left. Heart stopped. They got me back to surgery. And the doctor said, "By all rights, Beth, you were gone. You were dead." And being the good surgeon he is, he said, "I'm going to try one more thing," after they went like this and couldn't get anywhere. So they put the needle in the heart and went like this. And then the thing picked up, and I hemorrhaged. I lost 4.5 quarts of blood. a hemorrhage from the breastbone, and they recut open and they fix this and that and do do do. And 7 hours later, as you can see, everything worked out all right. In that time, I went somewhere. I didn't see a white light or any of that. I just went somewhere. I have never seen sky so blue. I have never seen clouds so white. Never seen grass so green. The color of the flowers is, I never want to forget it. And there was a lake, clear. And across that lake was coming a boat. And the boat was being rowed by a man. And there were two children in the boat. And as it came closer, I knew who they were. And when the boat beached, the man and the two children got out of the boat. And as they walked towards me and I walked towards them, I really knew who it was. And Bruce put his arms around me. I could feel the kids hugging me. And he said to me, "You can't stay. Your job's not done. And when your job is done, and you come home, we'll be here waiting for you." I have never felt such love. I have never felt such forgiveness. I have never felt such peace in my life. It's a miracle. A miracle that we all have. And all we have to do is not drink. Go to meetings. Get a sponsor. Trust God. Clean house and help another drunk. And now may the road rise to meet you and the wind be always at your back and the sun shine warm upon your face and the rain fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hands, in the nows of each day. Thank you. God bless you. Have a wonderful life.